Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
This is episode 10, the bonus episode of Blood Culture. I'm Lance Dan, the show's producer.
And I'm David Wigram, the co-writer.
And for this episode, we're going to be in the studio. We're going to join Jack and Bryony and Christina and the whole crew. And we're just going to be talking about the project and some of the ideas that span out of it.
We just want to say thanks for coming on this journey with us. And we will hand over now to the studio for our very final episode of Blood Culture.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye. Well, guys, well done. Lance.
Yes.
Who won?
I think Aisha won, didn't she, in a way? I mean, she ended up cutting herself free from both her fathers and being her own person, I think. And sort of also overcoming her mother and overcoming the death of her mother. So she got closure. She was able to move on. And we kind of leave her swinging in a hammock, and we're not ever quite sure what she's going to do afterwards. But yeah, that was enough, even though the journey was much, much worse than she ever imagined.
It was pretty brutal. Bryony, where's Livy after all of this?
Wow, I think she's on to her next mission, surely.
She might accidentally get drunk under a table for 6 months
She'll
and not
know. She'll definitely get drunk for a long time, do a lot of partying, you know, living on a crazy boat and doing some foraging and catching insects to put in jars, I don't know, mad stuff. And then she'll find some political beast to solve and catch.
The thing about people like Livy is she's not that focused enough to immediately have another. It's a bit like, if something catches her eye, she'll go for it.
I think it's worth asking Alan, do you think the other Alan, the fictional Alan, has he got a future with Livy?
Certainly hopes so. Every day is an adventure, isn't it?
I think that's the truth.
I think she's rejuvenated his life in lots of ways, given him something to, fight for, as it were.
So you're hopeful for them?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I think they're all happy to be alive at the end of that, though, aren't they?
But this is going to be his midlife crisis, isn't it?
It's over.
Well, Alan's midlife crisis is over. I think Livy is going to be his midlife crisis.
Come on, he's been round the block before, for goodness sake.
No one like Livy, though, surely.
No, Grebo and Arco Syndicalists, that's right.
Obviously, poor Richard, he basically went through the physical crisis of stripping his body of all kind of functioning stem cells. Christina, am I right in this? He killed all his stem cells, is this right?
Yes, he did.
And then, stuck new ones in. Is this actually believable? Could this happen? Is this just made up in the fevered brain of Lance Dan?
No, well, this is actually the very first type of regenerative medicine that was ever done. Bone marrow transplantation has been done since the 60s, and it has saved many lives.
If you inject someone with stem cells, what do the stem cells do?
So the injection of stem cells here is an injection of very specific stem cells, and they are blood stem cells. And yes, you just inject them intravenously, and they know by themselves to go to the bone marrow and do their job there. In fact, it has been calculated blood stem cells do enter circulation normally every once in a while, but they stay only for about 2 minutes, and within 2 minutes, they are back into the bone marrow. And this is the same that happens during bone marrow transplantation when
How do they know?
Well, there is a whole receptor ligand interaction, and it's a signaling cascade that takes place.
What?
And there is a big magnet that is produced by the bone marrow, which is called CXCL12.
Right.
And there is a receptor for it that the stem cell have, which is called CXCR4. And basically, anything that expresses CXCR4 is just.
It's just like
CXCL12
a magnet.
When we will go
it's just
it.
Like a magnet. That's a shame, because I actually thought the stem cells were kind of like autonomous and found their own way, but it's plain magnetic attraction. I'm a bit disappointed there. I thought they kind of wended their own way individually, like little entities?
Well, they do find their own way by themselves, but they are guided by signals. Now mine, CXCL12, is taking them to the bone marrow. In fact, one of the things that we do with my research group during my day job is to actually look at the stem cells as they enter the bone marrow and figure out where they go. And they don't go just quite anywhere. They find some very specific places that are really, really special, and we really want to find out what is special about them.
And do we know how they do that?
Only in part.
Cool.
Still more science to do.
But they wouldn't harm each other. In other words, they know not to impinge in some way, or instinctively don't.
Exactly. And somehow they work all together. So they are dispersed throughout our whole bone marrow, which is in a number of our bones. And somehow they know between all of them, so far apart within the organism, how many blood cells they need to generate every day. And this is actually billions, and it is done in the correct amount.
If you were asked whether you're a holist or a reductionist, what would you answer?
Ooh.
Because it sounds holistic, that.
Yes, it is. It is actually one of the big challenges we have at the moment. So what I do in my day job is to use microscopy and to look at single blood stem cells and look at where they are and look at what they do. And this is on a cell per cell basis.
But
the big question that we have is, how do the few thousands of blood stem cells that we have in our body manage to work together and regenerate our blood for the entirety of our life? So we have this constant tension between the single cell and the population. And when you look at single cells, they do lots of very different things. And at the moment, the buzzword is heterogeneity, because when we look at many single cells, they are all a little bit different. And yet you take these heterogeneous little cells, you put them together in a population, and as a population, they're incredibly robust, and day after day after day, billions of new red cells, white blood cells, platelet throughout our life, more if we need more, fewer if we need fewer, perfect.
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead, Lance.
Richard's got sickle cell thalassemia, right?
Correct.
Where's he from then?
What Dr. Christina said, if you remember a couple of episodes ago...
Wasn't paying attention.
Were you not? Typical. is that although there's a very high incidence amongst people from West Africa, this is within the UK where the research is done, high incidence of people from West Africa and reasonably high on people from the Caribbean, people from parts of Greece have a 1 in 100 chance, which across a large population is pretty high.
Yeah. So he's obviously got some Greek ancestry.
Yeah, I'm descended from Aristotle.
Yes, why I chose Drea as a South African name. That just worked perfectly there. Boom, I hit that one out, the thing. But also, like, if you look at the behaviour of companies like Amazon and Google, they put a lot of money into researching longevity. Google have got a longevity programme. As Jeff Bezos funds the long now, it's like once you become the richest person on earth, there's only one thing that they can't fight, and that's death and their own mortality.
Yeah, and there's a long, strong belief. I mean, this is something I actually worked on. One of the kooky CEOs with whom I've had dealings actually hired me, and I was the professor for the public understanding of science in a think tank in Belgium. And one of the things was, you know, doing away with death. And, you know, I used to conduct debates, you know, is immortality a good thing or a bad thing? Because, you know, to expect a flower to live forever, that would be an insult to the flower. Nevertheless, it's something that makes us godlike. It's something that people want. And there's a guy called Ray Kurzweil. I'm sure you all know about him. I saw him speak, actually. He takes over 200 pills a day to stay alive. And actually, Google have hired him. He's convinced that we don't have to die. I did watch him speak, and actually, he does burp a lot. But yes and no, it is a dream. This is the era when we really think we're coming close to being godlike. I'm not convinced, but that's the idea. So to answer your question, yes, to be a vengeful. It doesn't matter what kind of god you are, as long as you're a god.
And he's flawed, and that's the thing. And he'd
no
hate
flaws.
That.
Absolutely not a flaw.
It would be a lot easier.
Now, obviously, so Richard has got his total body irradiation room with God knows how much kind of nuclear material in there. He's producing vast amounts of artificial blood. What kind of team behind the scenes would he actually need to get all this done?
Massive.
Okay, give me a rough round number here.
Well, I can tell you I have not seen, but I've been told by someone who did see an irradiator being moved in real life. And this was done overnight, and it involved a whole lot of military, a whole lot of roads being closed. And yeah, it was really a mission that was not something that you just do one day to the other by yourself.
And so are we talking some sort of militaristic kind of dictatorship here? Or?
Yes. Well, because of course any source of radiation is a huge security issue.
Was this in the UK?
That was in the US, but in the UK it would be pretty much the same.
Okay, so he needed the cooperation of the military. He needed to close roads. He needs a team of probably quite a lot of doctoral students to turn out all this blood. Yeah, that's a...
He can keep this secret. I mean, part of the thing was that there was no... didn't want us to implicate any particular scientists, so that all the scientists were somehow kept this quiet by only giving them small slices of information. That's believable, isn't it?
So, Steve, whilst the drama has been playing out, had people been investigative and got into blood-culture.com, which is your domain, which is your area, they might have found something... quite innovative.
That's right. If they've applied for a position with Meta via the MetaBeta website rather than the actual blood culture website, then they can get caught up in playing an interactive text game which enables them to help Justine and guide her through all kinds of adventures.
So you basically start just by kind of sending a text as part of your application process, and kind of get drawn into a bit of a thriller yourself, where you're a partner in crime to this young woman Justine as she dashes around the Meta building, and she asks you to do things. She asks you to sort of send things, and
absolutely, if there's a distraction that needs to happen, then you know she asks you to tweet or to send an email to Richard or whoever, in order that she can get through and, you know, get into someone's office or something like that. And you direct her going through, you help her as she goes through.
Now, Lance has been telling me that people have been getting quite friendly with Justine.
It has been. One of the problems is that people want to chat to her all the time. Here she is, the poor thing. She's running around trying to get these
secret documents.
It's actually
a simple AI.
It's not a simple AI.
It's a very simple AI.
It's highly sophisticated.
It's like a choose-your-own-adventure with like a few more options. And people keep on asking out for drinks.
Oh, do they? They fall for her.
But they, it seems to be a natural inclination if you're a male of a certain age. That if you've got a millennial called Justine SMSing you, you've instantly asked her out for drinks. Then I have to point out that it was coded by Steve and I. It's like asking us out for drinks. It seems to be less effective.
I'm happy to be asked out for drinks. That's no problem.
What sort of age group are the men who do this?
Well, I know, mostly my middle-aged friends who've been trying it. But actually, the interesting thing is that like because it's via SMS, it's got an intimacy to it. That people don't seem to make that distinct, you know, they think they can just talk to her like a normal person. And it is a very crude, simple AI that's spinning you through
this
story.
It's a sophisticated AI.
Oh, stop it. It's picking out keywords that you say. And if someone says, I'm busy, I'm down the pub, or do you, you sound a bit lonely, why didn't you go on Tinder, someone said to her the other day. I haven't actually predicted that someone would say that. And then she gets all confused. And it's been a really interesting experiment from that point of view, just seeing how people use it. And actually, a friend of mine's 14-year-old son got in trouble with his headmaster. He thought he was involved in some sort of weird scam and got pulled up before the headmaster because he had all these weird texts on his phone. From some strange woman. Also, I want someone to get into a fight with their partner over this. This would be brilliant.
Yeah, that sounds great,
Lance. Who are you texting? Oh, Justine. Oh, 72
Who
texts
is
from
Justine?
Her. Exactly. It's just perfect. But I mean, like, it's about the form. It's got an intimacy SMS. I mean, we'd rather let the rabbit out of the bag. Hopefully we might be able to get it onto Twitter.
Yeah, that's the aim. We're going to try and port it over so that people can interact with the AI, the sophisticated AI, using Twitter.
But everyone understands that it's fiction and that this place is not that ideal to work for. So they're part of the game.
They know. If you've bothered to go down the rabbit hole, you'll know it's fiction. But people seem to... I tell people, you know, when we've been testing it, when we've been testing it, we've flagged it with people and they still really quickly seem to forget.
Sorry, are they looking for employment?
No, they're not. They know that it's a game. But even if you know it's a game, people stop. They start chatting in really surprising ways. And I think it's because of the intimacy of the form. It's too potent. If you were just on a little computer game or something like that on a simple screen, you'd know that it was a choose your own adventure. But you put it on someone's texts and they think it's a person. I can't find a lot of precedents of people using this combination of technologies, the kind of the engine behind it and SMS. So it's kind of a little bit innovative like that, which is why it keeps on breaking. Doesn't break. See? It doesn't break.
Just reacts in slightly odd ways, that's all.
Yeah, like repeating the same thing over and over and over again.
As an engineer of my friend of mine once said, it's a feature, not a fault.
Repetitive Justine.
And come on, they're asking her to go down the pub, right? So
yeah, when she's in the middle of an adventure and hiding under her boss's desk or whatever happens. So. But yes, hopefully you should be able to, if you sniff around the website, you should be able to find this on Twitter if we've got it up and running. If you don't find it, we haven't.
Thanks, Lance.
Got out of that one.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/realm.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out the Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Find the Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Simon, as we've gone through this story, part of what's made it very immersive has been the fact that it's not just people talking. There's a whole world around them, and there's a sense of the space that they're in. Can you talk a little bit about the process of kind of building that world?
Well, I suppose it's about creating that immersive experience, and I've worked in radio for quite a long time, and a project like this is quite unusual to have that opportunity to do that, because normally the kind of dramas that I work on, the sound is used in a very basic way, And there are reasons for that, because there isn't often the time to really get into the detailed sound design. And I think it's probably the simplest thing to compare this to is that it's closer to probably a TV program or a film, where that level of detail is really important. And probably, you know, both me and Lance are quite obsessive about these things and drive ourselves mad. And we both laughed about the amount of detail and sound that we'll put in. So, for example, if a character is just sitting having a conversation, but I think it's important to give a sense of movement and that physicality there. So in the back of Richard's car, there's a scene, and I've just used the creak of leather seats occasionally just to give that feeling that there's people in there, there's people moving around, and it's just subtle things like that. Now, you're lazy, so
I just put loads of music on, and then hope that no one notices that the creeks aren't there. Any sound of some of the extra creaks in came from Simon and Marley.
Yeah,
the stuff with loads of music was me.
But it's interesting because you'd think that the big set pieces are the harder ones to do, with all the kind of crazy weird stuff going on. But actually it's the more realistic, naturalistic stuff that takes the time. That my bugbear is always footsteps.
Mm.
Because, you know, without having the budget to do proper Foley, you're reliant on a library.
And what's Foley?
Foley is using items, objects to create sounds, and it's normally used in film and TV because there's normally no film, there's normally no sound recorded on set when you're recording a TV program or a film.
So you'd actually be performing footsteps.
Yeah, so the coconut shells—that's the cliche idea for horses' hooves.
Or a kiss.
Yeah, but also footsteps. So there are people. It's a really specialist art. There's not that many Foley artists.
Right, because there aren't guys who want to wear heels and boots on different days.
So all these people, they have massive collections of different shoes, different floorings, and they will spend days just getting the footsteps right in TV and film.
I think it's the sounds that we're familiar with can be the hardest, because obviously we hear footsteps all the time in our lives and we can detect them. Whereas someone having a fight on a slide, I've never actually heard that. So
have you
probably,
not?
No, not a massive one of my children having fights on slides. I could guess that. Or, you know, I've never been in a hippie van as it spins down a hill. So it's kind of like, it's not something that we're, you know, that's probably just some smashing sounds. But yeah, you get down to the very everyday sounds and you know you have to get them pinpoint right. So that's kind of like, that's where it can be quite difficult. But also you have to sort of stop yourself going in deeper and deeper. What was that?
It's a carrier bag.
On cue. The carrier bag sound effect.
That was very well edited in later.
Slowly. But the other thing I think that's good about this, and what I personally enjoy about doing radio drama, is the blurring of sound design and music. And it's just so nice to use music in a way that might be descriptive of some of the physical things that are going on for some of the characters, rather than just being there to signpost, I don't know, just to set up a scene.
Or signpost emotional states.
Yeah.
So, and that's the thing, I mean, we've talked about this in Three, but, you know, that's the thing you can do with radio drama. You're not slave to a time code, so you can cut the action to the music or the music to the action, and they can kind of really work together fluidly. And when you have people like Claire who allow you to cut their music and turn it upside down, are you allowed to hit the beats of the action in a very active way? And that's something we've done throughout it, I hope.
That's that one. Yeah, can I just say, that's fantastic, Pat, what you've just done. That's really sells it so well as a thing. It really does.
But also it's about being unapologetic with the sound, because normally in dramas it's so, you know, the sound, it's almost like you can imagine the producers, you know, the directors going, oh, let's have that sound effect there. Oh, that's too loud, let's pull it back a little bit. And what we've done, I think, is just, it's in your face. You know, there are times when it's really loud, and it's, you know, it's nice when you're I mean, obviously the dialogue is most important, but you want to feel like the action's really happening and like you're in the midst of it. And
headphone listening. Presumably, most people who are still listening to this are on headphones at the moment. We're talking directly into people's earbuds, and therefore you can do a lot more.
It does make a huge difference, actually. Yeah, I've listened to it both now on headphones and kind of on speakers. And when you've got those headphones on, it gives you this incredible space around you. It's really got a shape and a place. It's incredibly good.
Most people listening to it will be on headphones.
Right. I mean, you guys have become very zeitgeisty, because in the theatre now, in the last kind of 5 years, it's become a big thing. In the old days, everyone said, oh, we're doing visual theatre, we're doing physical theatre, visual. And suddenly, of late, storytelling has become very important, and so has sound. So Complicité and people at the Battersea Arts and so on have done shows that are completely dedicated to sound, and to sound that puts you in it. I mean, I saw a show, there were hundreds of people there, the Complicité show, where each of us had earphones and we were all in it. It's really zeitgeisty. Well done.
There's something about sound that allows you to, it draws you in so deeply. It is very immersive in a way that film doesn't ever quite hit that level for me. And even theatre, you're kind of aware of the fourth wall, you're aware of them down there. Whereas, you know, you can lose yourself in sound. The only other thing about podcasting makes it a bit different is probably people are listening to this as they're walking around, driving a car, doing the washing up. And therefore, it's kind of like you can't go completely. We can't ask the audience to sit in a darkened room with the lights off. And so that we're assuming that as people are listening to this, they're doing something else. And therefore, it has to. That's why we've got a lot of narration to hold your hand to guide you through.
Simon, can I ask you a question? Mostly prompted from the fact that we have talked about a lot about artificially generated blood that is not real blood, but is made to be like real blood. Do you think this could happen for the Foley artist as well? Will we get to a point where we will no longer need to have all the different shoes and the different floorings, but we will know exactly what is the note and the frequency and everything of the sound that needs to be produced, and we can just fabricate it?
Yeah.
Generative audio. There is that. I've seen someone build a fire and a helicopter just out of pure tones.
Oh, really?
There was a guy I worked with once, and I've completely forgotten his name.
Great story, lads.
Great story. But basically, yes, it is. It's possible to construct sounds out of raw data. There's a program called Pure Data that you can use, and you can construct sounds in that way. And the idea was that you'd work out the parameters of a dustbin or something like that, and then any angle you hit it within, say, a video game, it would make the right sound. Once those parameters were in there, it was just pure data form. You didn't need to go and record millions of dustbins. It would be in there, and then you could interact with it anyway.
So it's like a 3D printer of sound.
Yeah.
There's a guy. Because all sound is made up of sine waves, and it's all dependent on how loud they are at certain frequencies makes up a unique timbre. So, but it's just having the computing power to have enough of those sine waves at the right frequencies and levels, whether a sound will sound realistic and believable.
And see, I've been working in radio probably more than any of you have been alive. I'm serious. How do you do something like, I don't know, stabbing or chopping a head off or those kind of things?
Meat.
You know, those kind of...
Grapefruits.
Yeah, grapefruits.
So, yeah, meat and things like that.
Melons and...
Yeah, watermelons get it big time.
Actual slashing of meat.
So... Yeah. But we actually didn't actually attack any meat in the series.
No, I know, but I'm just saying those are examples of things where people have puzzled over it. And yeah. But to manufacture something, that's really interesting.
Yeah, but it's still easier just going to butcher a watermelon and probably more fun. So, I didn't do any actually insane Foley. I mean, I did a lot of walking, it seemed, and punching myself in alleyways.
Wait, was the walking okay then? When we walked, was that okay for what we did?
I added the walking for everyone in my scenes, but I did. I used library sounds because I just didn't have the time, budget, to do proper Foley. So I had to use library stuff, and then I would chop it up so that the time would be right and suit what was going on in the drama.
Yeah, and I punched myself in alleyways. Mm.
Did you really?
Yeah, at night. I had to go down to an alleyway. For the bit where Ewan attacks Aisha, I had to go to an alleyway at night. And I was with the microphone set up, and I was attacking a leather jacket.
Could you do it?
I haven't got my leather jacket. I've only got an anorak. And it's you know, I thought, oh, God, if someone catches me now, it's just going to be so embarrassing. And it was just me standing there punching this thing.
But I wonder
in the cold
if there's any difference
air.
In our movements. If, say, you were being Livy and I was being...
You have different ones. I know you have to identify each file so that I had Livy's stomps and Aisha's runs and things. And also I had to work out who was wearing what clothes.
Yeah, I had so different coats for different characters.
Livy always wore a leather jacket. Yeah. So Ewan wore my anorak.
I like, one of my favourite bits actually, I'll be selfish here and talk about, is where Ewan's attacking Aisha. And I use the leather jacket again for leather gloves, so you've got that creaking sound. You actually felt like there was a physical squeezing going on.
Okay, guys, so I'm going to have to sort of wrap us up there for time purposes. Earlier on, we were looking ahead at maybe what might lie in the future for some of these characters. And we were all thinking, guessing, having a sense of it. But one person probably knows more than the rest of us. Lance, what's happening with these people?
Well, I mean, Livy's probably wasted and having a good time. Alan's probably trying to keep up. Richard's talking to his lawyers. Aisha's in the hammock just figuring out who she is. Saul's bumping around. Where was he going? You sent him off somewhere.
Oh, yeah. Well, he's off on the Silk Road, isn't he?
He's off on the Silk Road, yeah.
Classic trip.
Can't believe Venny's going to hold that job down.
Yeah, okay. But is there any drama in their future, Lance?
But Kim is going to be probably trying to find out which island that Richard has gone hiding on to. So, and in general, are you saying, are we going to see these characters again?
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
Entirely dependent on the audience. We need people out there actually to, yeah, if you want us to come back, there's a chance. There's things waiting to happen, aren't there?
Okay, so what you're saying, Lance, is if you want to hear the characters come back, oh, God, spread the word of the podcast.
Yes, send us your, just love. We just need reviews, and we haven't actually banged on about reviews, you see. Review us on iTunes. Tweet us, tweet the Wellcome Trust and tell them that they want more money for more series, and keep following us. And I think these people might come back.
All right. Well, I know that's what I want. I want to see the further adventures of Livy and Anna. So I've got to say thank you to everyone. Steve, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
Jack, thanks for your contributions.
That was amazing. Thank you.
Alan.
Pleasure.
Bryony, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And Simon, love to have you.
Thank you.
And Dr. Christina, edifying as ever.
It's been a pleasure.
And Lance, thank you very much.
Thank you very much indeed, David.
All right. And from Blood Culture for now, it's saying goodbye.
Anna Sheridan, New York Times bestselling author of Supernatural Horror. Missing for nearly 6 months now.
That's not possible. Is the compass broken? Or did I turn to the side?
Given the circumstances of her disappearance, someone with a more vivid imagination might decide she'd pierced the veil, so to speak.
Weak radio signal. 700 meters. Closing fast.
There's no place for ghost stories and close encounters in this investigation, or any other.
I need you to find me.
To save yourself.
Of course. What else would it be?
The Sheridan Tapes, a serialized horror mystery podcast. Stream the complete series today on Realm and on all podcasting platforms.